Welcome to the Fantasy Finessers Podcast. I'm Eddie Wasserman. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm joined here as always by Colin Kapoor. Colin, how are you today?
No, Matt, I'm good. We survived week 15 in my key league. I had Jalen Hurts and DK going. Jalen popped a 30 bomb, so I'm happy. You know, we're focusing on week 16 now. It feels like there's football every day. You know, I love it. But no, I'm doing well.
Well, it was certainly a tenuous week of football this week, just because it's the fantasy playoffs, so obviously the intensity is ratcheted up across the league, and this was one of the worst fantasy weeks we've seen in a long time, just in time for the fantasy playoffs, left a lot of people disappointed, and I think we have to start here with a lot of the worst performers of this week, people that really left us disappointed in this week, and I think that has to start with Najee Harris, who knocked a lot of people out. People have been riding the coattails of guys like Harris all season long, a top five running back through the year, and he laid a total dud this week, disappointment. And what I want to talk about with him specifically, and we can get to some more down the line, is if you were able to survive this week with someone like Harris or Cordell Patterson, how can we trust them going forward?
Yeah, Najee Harris was a victim of a horrible offense against what was once a pretty poor defense in the Titans, but they've actually stepped it up. They've allowed the fourth fewest rushing yards heading into this week, and Najee ended up with only 18 on 12 carries. And then also the receiving work, which is something that we thought for Najee as kind of his floor, maybe 6-point floor with three catches. He only had two catches for 8 yards. And the efficiency, you know, there is none. And he only had 14 touches. And with Najee, another thing in his profile was his volume. So he's, that's not good by any stretch of the imagination for Harris. But I think, you know, you got this far with him. He's still the number four running back in PPR. He's got Kansas City, which has been a solid run defense, honestly, but Chris Jones is probably going to be back in this game for Kansas City, probably one of the better inside D tackles in the game. So, you know, Najee Harris, he's had a couple duds in the past month or so, but you know, he put up 25 against Minnesota last week. I think you gotta roll with him. He's a guy you drafted high. He's a guy that is the number four running back in PPR, like I said. So you can trust him. I think going to this week, he also got vultured by Big Ben getting a QB sneak touchdown, which hasn't happened in 3 years, I think, something like that. So, you know, he punches in that touchdown. He's got 11 points, and you're not too unhappy with what Najee gave you.
Right, and Tennessee, the third-ranked rushing defense against fantasy players since week 11, so something to think about there. But now I want to talk about Cordell Patterson. And is the Cordell Patterson hype train, this magical fairy tale kind of season we've talked about with Patterson all year, kind of wearing off? I'm someone that rosters Patterson in my league where I won this week, and I survived a brutal performance from Patterson, 4 points. But after he put up 13 in week 14, he put up 12 points the week earlier in week 13. It starts to get a little concerning for Patterson, especially when he's seeing this little receiving work. That's now 5 straight games where you've had 3 receptions or less. I'm certainly worried about Patterson. Do you even feel comfortable starting him next week against Detroit?
Yeah, well, it is against Detroit, so that is a favorable matchup on the rushing side of things. He did get 11 carries, 2 catches, and Mike Davis, who came in with 16 total touches in week 14, you were kind of afraid of him eating into that workload. He only had 6 touches in this week. So Patterson, you know, the Falcons can't get out of their own way when it comes to playing football, and they got thoroughly dominated by San Francisco, which you would think would turn into more targets for Patterson. Being more of a passing down guy, a wide receiver, as well as a running back, but it just didn't turn out. And the efficiency running the ball hasn't really been there at all this season. Yeah. He's had a couple of games because when he has lower carries, he gets higher yards per carry. He had that one game where he had 16 carries for 108 yards, but that's kind of an anomaly to this point. So he's not as efficient running the ball, but you know, you see that the dynamic nature of his play when he's out as a receiver, but he hasn't really been able to do that in the past month or so. But against Detroit, I think you gotta roll with him this week. Like, you can chalk a lot of these week 15 duds up to victims of circumstance or something like that. And week 16, I think we're gonna see a bounce back in terms of total scoring for a lot of these players. So I think Detroit, the matchup for Patterson is good. And it should be a competitive game now that Detroit's coming in. They just beat Arizona. I think it's going to be a competitive game, so I think Patterson's going to get a lot of work in this one.
Yeah, well, we'll get to some more about Detroit in a minute. But on the Atlanta side, we talked about Patterson's not seeing a lot of those targets. Well, where are those targets going? And a lot of them are going to Russell Gage, who at this point has kind of reached this must-start status. And you don't feel that way about Gage. You have this preconceived notion about him. But after four straight weeks where he's put up double digits, and this week getting 11 targets, 8 receptions, 91 yards. He was awesome this week. I think he might be, I mean, his career production kind of makes you think he's this wide receiver 3 type, but, you know, he ranks 13th in wide receiver fantasy production in the last 4 weeks. I think you have to start him next week if he's on your team.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's the kind of PPR stud that you see that you know, his profile as a slot receiver kind of gels to. He's put up, like you said, double digits in the past 4 weeks. And then there's that two times in the past 3 weeks where he's got more than 10 targets. And in those games, he's put up 21 and 23 points when he gets more than 10 targets. But also in week 12, he got 7 targets, still put up a 6 for 62 in one line. And that kind of matches up with another guy, probably my favorite wide receiver. This might be getting into winners a little bit too early, but Amon-Ra St. Brown, I mean, what a guy over here, getting 8 catches, 90 yards and a touchdown. He and Russell Gage kind of mirror each other in terms of profile of that slot guy. Gage has been in the league for a little bit longer, but him and Amon-Ra, they're it's kind of funny. They're both like the exact same height and the exact same weight. It's kind of funny, but they're both slot receivers. And for Amon-Ra St. Brown, I mean, he's said that Jared Goff has said St. Brown's become kind of a safety blanket for him. He looks for him. With TJ Hawkinson now out for the rest of the season, I think St. Brown is going to ratchet up. I think top 20 wide receiver for sure. And then PPR, I mean, 10 plus targets in 3 straight games, putting up 24 points, 15 points, and 23 points. I think he and Gage are rock solid smash plays in the matchup against each other in week 16.
Now, my question about Detroit is DeAndre Swift looks like he's finally going to come back from that shoulder injury he's been nursing for a couple weeks. I'm someone that has Swift. Now, again, we have to preface this by saying likely your fantasy playoffs have happened. If you were to survive to this point without someone like Swift, now he comes back, and you have to wonder, does that eat into the target share of someone like St. Brown? Swift is an obvious play this week. We're not breaking any news there, but I do wonder if that will cut a little into St. Brown. I still think you're starting Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's been that good, as you were just alluding to, but that is a little bit of a concern for me. So I want to switch now to a couple more of these disappointing.
Well, I will say one thing about Swift. Swift was out in week 13, and from 13 to 15, he's been out. And of course, St. Brown's 10 plus target game started in week 13, 13, 14, 15. Now, those games were all without DeAndre. So it is definitely a concern, but I think with St. Brown, he became more of a producer in this offense. He's a rookie wide receiver, so it took him a little bit, obviously, to get going. But I think you can still trust him. I really do, even with Swift coming back. And this is a not great Falcons team, but I think Detroit's gonna kill them in this game. Honestly, I think even with Swift coming back, like you said, you're starting Swift. I think St. Brown's going to be okay, even though it is a bit concerning, because when Swift was on the field, St. Brown's targets were hovering around that 4 to 5 mark as opposed to that 10 to 12 mark. So it is a bit concerning, but I think with St. Brown, you can hang your hat on the past 3 weeks as opposed to what was happening a month or so ago.
For sure. So what I want to transition now to is a couple more disappointing backs, and some are victim of circumstances, but the one that is really ringing alarm bells right now is Joe Mixon. It was just 3 weeks ago that we were talking about Joe Mixon. He had this performance against Pittsburgh in week 12, 32 fantasy points. He had 28 carries, 165 yards. He even had 4 receptions in that game, and you were like, this is the guy. He's one of the best in the league. It was really exciting. He's put together 3 straight single-digit performances, and when you actually dig into the numbers, stuff like EPA per play and certain advanced metrics, he's been the least productive running back in the league. His success rate is last in rush EPA and overall success rate in the league on running backs with 25 or more carries since week 13. So it's really, really alarming in that he's actually not performing, regardless, set aside the fantasy implications. He's not performing on the field as a player right now. And that's translated to the fantasy production being really, really dismal. So what evidence do we have that after 3 straight single-digit performances, even when he's getting a solid amount of carries, that, like, is he really going to turn this around getting 17 carries, 58 yards, one reception. There's really not a lot of evidence that points to Mixon really improving over the backstretch of the playoffs.
Yeah, with Mixon, there was an ankle injury that I believe he suffered late in the game against Denver. He was only on the field 58% of the snaps, which is kind of where he's been hovering, but he was on like 77%. Yeah, he did practice today. Zach Taylor is saying he's feeling pretty good. So it looks like he avoided serious injury. And the tough thing here is Baltimore is allowing a league low 86.2 rushing yards per game, which is his matchup here. But I think it's a huge divisional game, obviously, between the Bengals and Baltimore. Mixon is a number five RB, and I know always start your studs is a little outdated at this point. There's a lot of fantasy football stats that don't back up the always start your studs. I think there is no better evidence to not always start your studs than week 15 of this fantasy football season. But I don't know, like, Mixon got you to where you are. I think you might have to roll with him, but it is a really tough matchup against Baltimore. So if you have someone, maybe a Jeff Wilson playing on Thursday, maybe you want to put him in over Mixon. It's a tough call. It really is. But
you might have to bite the bullet. And that's why I brought up Mixon, because you're getting the carrying production in terms of the number of carries. But he's been so inefficient with those carries that it's hard to justify where you kind of turn with him. And unlike when we talked, I think, about someone earlier in the day like Najee Harris, that's a one-game blip. It's not a blip with him. It's a little bit of a longer-term thing.
Yeah, and one thing that I don't know if you know Adam Azer, he's a CBS analyst. He mentioned something that I thought was actually very interesting, that with COVID outbreaks now, having players going on Thursday who are guaranteed to play on Thursday might actually be better, because a player's status at this point is no longer like set in stone. So even with Mixon's ankle injury, like, he is playing on Sunday, and maybe, you know, Jeff Wilson may not be the best example, because Mixon is a top five running back on the year. Jeff Wilson is a backup, you know, backing up Eli Mitchell, but he could get the spot start. But it is interesting, just you have that certainty of a player who will actually be playing and won't be on the COVID list if they're playing on Thursday as opposed to Sunday.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we'll get to the COVID stuff in a minute, but just sticking with the Bengals for 1 minute. Jamar Chase, so I had the great fortune of playing against Jamar Chase this week, and I got the fantasy win in large part because Jamar Chase laid an egg, a horrendous performance for him. Almost a performance that makes you think, like, you look at the stat line, one reception, 3 yards, and you're kind of going like, wait, was he hurt? Like, did I not miss that? Did they not show it on red zone? Whatever. Nope. He was there. Jamar Chase was on the field. He just had that kind of day. It was a horrible time for this kind of performance, and he's kind of hit the rookie wall a little bit, I think. But even he had 5 receptions, 77 yards, and he had those 2 touchdowns against San Francisco in week 14, and then he goes to this Denver, and it was an ugly game, right? 15-10. It was not a fun game against Denver that they played. But that being said, it certainly is concerning, and do you feel comfortable? Because it feels like Chase is getting really touchdown dependent right now for his production.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tyler Boyd in this game got that touchdown, five catches for 96 yards. That was obviously a big play, 56-yard touchdown. And for Jamar Chase, he only got 4 targets, and he played 96% of the snaps. And you've seen the targets steadily go down over the past month and a half. I mean, he had 8 targets for 2 straight weeks and 13 and 14, but a week before he had 3 targets. A week before that, he only had 6.
Well, the
6.
Other thing is that Joe Burrow had 15 pass attempts in this game.
I think in a game against Baltimore, like we said, the best rushing defense in the entire league, 86.2 yards per game. I think they're going to have to air it out. I think Lamar will probably be back. It's going to be, it's weird to say it's probably going to be a shootout, but in the shootout style games this season have been just defensive games. You think back to the Chiefs Cowboys game that we thought was going to be a shootout and ended up not being one. But I think this divisional game is probably going to be a shootout. So Jamar Chase, I think you're downgrading him maybe to the top, to close to the top 20. He's not the top
really,
7
you'd
guy.
You'd only say
top
20, because I would even go further than that, just because it feels like, I know he had the good week 2 weeks ago, but it just feels like that was predicated on those 2 touchdowns, that without that, he kind of feels, I'm not saying you don't start him, but I just think you have to do a little bit more hesitancy with him right now.
Yeah, I think one thing, Chase, you know, breaking free for those big gains is part of his profile. We haven't seen that in a while. Like, he had that long touchdown against the Chargers that he ended up bobbling and that turned into an interception. I believe we talked about that a couple weeks ago. But other than, like, he's hasn't been able to break free for like those big games. Like we saw in that 200 yard game a long time ago, feels like years ago at this point, where he broke free from like a slant route and took that, took a pass 70 something yards for the touchdown. And we haven't really been able, he hasn't really been able to do that as of late. So that is very concerning for a deep threat receiver. But yeah, I think you have to keep him in your lineup. I know I keep saying this for these stud type guys, so it might I don't know.
It's a difficult thing because you're so tied to the hip to these people, especially the ones that have carried you all the year. And I know this is true for me with someone like Patterson that we talked about earlier. You want to kind of ride with this guy who's really been so responsible for getting me to this point in the fantasy season where I'm in the semifinals because of the surprise that Patterson has been all year. But now you reach this point and you kind of have to work past that. So I do wonder, with Chase again, I think you play him, but not without a little bit of hesitancy. So we kind of alluded to a minute ago.
Like I think one interesting thing to compare would be Chase or a Russell Gage or an Amon-Ra St. Brown.
It's a good point.
Like Chase's floor, as we've seen, is one catch for 3 yards. And Russell Gage has put up double-digit points for an entire month, like in a playoff matchup where you need to get these points. Like, would it be prudent to start a PPR floor guy like Gage over a Jamar Chase who can get you 25 points in a given week, but who can also put up a goose? You know, like, it's an interesting conversation to have.
Right, and I think that's a good kind of like fantasy philosophy thing. And I think right now, I would say if you're in that situation, now you probably have with all the COVID absences there, you might need to start both because of the situation of teams. But I do think right now I probably lean towards starting that Gage or St. Brown just because, and it's difficult to kind of make that proclamation. But if you're faced with that specific situation, there's not a clear-cut answer, and I would be fine going either way there. I don't see, like, just because you're right, you feel like it has to be Chase. That's so obvious. But it really isn't. With the production over the recent last couple weeks, especially on some of these bad teams where they don't have that many people to throw the ball to, Falcons, Lions being chief among them, you know, there's some value you could find there.
Yeah, and Gage's ceiling has basically matched Chase's ceiling over the past month. Chase hit a 25-point week. Gage has had 23, 21-point weeks. But Gage has also brought in the floor that Chase just, you know, is unable to do at this point in his career. He's a rookie. You know, that like you said, the rookie wallet is kind of expected. No one expects him to be as good as he was coming into this season. I think he exceeded all expectations in that regard. But I think it's an interesting conversation. I think if you're in a matchup where you're projected maybe to lose and you need an upside play that could bust a 30-point week, maybe you want to start Jamar Chase. But maybe if you're in a more tightly contested matchup and you need those guaranteed 10 points, you know, Gage or Amon-Ra St. Brown might be the play.
For sure. So I want to shift now to some of the COVID stuff going on, because the one game this week, and we talked a lot so far about a lot of the people that were having awful, that had horrible production this week. The one game where we really saw a lot of the stars shine was that Thursday night game, which was Chiefs and Chargers. Travis Kelce.
And the fact that that was week 15 just blows my mind, because it feels like it was so long ago.
Right, you weren't even thinking that much about it at that time, and that was even less than a week ago, and literally even then the world has kind of flipped upside down, even in this past 6-day period. So a lot of people's leagues were flipped upside down with Travis Kelce. I'm one of them. I had Kelce, 41 points. He had a crazy game, especially ending it that way. And by the way, Kelce had like 6 points early in the fourth quarter, and I was kind of looking at it. I was like, ah, Kelce, burn this first round pick. You suck, washed, whatever, the whole thing. And then all of a sudden, within a quarter, he literally had flipped around where he was becoming a league winner. So it can change that quickly with someone like Kelce. But now we're hit with the reality that both Kelce and Tyreek Hill have entered the COVID protocol. We know for sure, at least right now, that Kelce is vaccinated. And this game itself, there's a huge outbreak within the Chiefs organization. So it seems like this game could be pushed back. There's just a lot of uncertainty with it. And if you're someone that has a Travis Kelce, has a Tyreek Hill, really has anyone on this Chiefs team, you have to be wary and think of backup options, because even as good as they were, they might be out this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Kelce, like you said, is an individual who is vaccinated. So he is, if he is obviously asymptomatic and he ends up testing negative going forward, he should be fine. Tyreek Hill, I am not 100% sure about his vaccination status. But I would think he is more of a risk to miss this week than Kelce. I think Kelce probably has a higher chance of coming back.
Well, both we know Kelce's vaccinated and he tested positive a day earlier.
Yeah. So that obviously helps out for the status wise. But I mean, they're both uncertain for week 16. I would think that that game is going to be pushed back.
Right, and that's where things get really complicated from a fantasy perspective. You're relying on these people in the playoffs, and we have no idea what it's going to look like with this potential outbreak. So you have to be really cognizant of how you're stacking your roster, knowing that this game is going to happen. It's a 425 game, in theory, if it happens on time. You have to be willing, you have to have adjustments, especially if you have Kelce. You got to pick up a tight end, and we'll get into the waivers a little bit later if you're dealing with this type of situation, but you got to be cognizant of that beforehand, and it's an ever-evolving situation, so you just have to stay right on top of that.
Yeah, absolutely. This does go back to what we were talking about, having games that are played earlier.
For sure.
You're certain of playing. Obviously, Kelce and Hill are anomalies in the sense that Kelce is the number one at his position. So you're not going to, you know, start some waiver wire tight end that you know is playing on Thursday or whatever instead of Travis Kelce. But it comes down to, are you willing to take the risk on keeping Kelce in your lineup if he might not even play, and then picking up a Blake Bell or something?
Right. Or by the way, and this isn't necessarily about the Chiefs as much, but are you willing to start someone on New Orleans or Miami this week? Are you willing to start a Jalen Waddle, knowing that that's the Monday night game? Let's say something happens on Monday, all of a sudden you're screwed. There's no other games left. So we really have no idea. It's such a fluid situation, but there's ways you can kind of prepare yourself for that to try to give yourself the most advantageous situation.
Yeah, one thing that I thought that might have been a good idea was I actually worked the waiver wire before the Tuesday night games. I had a couple players on my roster on my bench. You're allowed to, at least in sleeper leagues, you're allowed to modify your bench players even if they've already played. So I was able to cut Royce Freeman. I was able to cut Gardner Minshew, who I had as insurance for Jalen Hurts. And I picked up Gerald Everett, Jordan Howard. And Gerald Everett put up 10 points for a tight end. That's great. I just lost Pat Freiermuth. So, like, you can do that with these postponed games. You can work the waiver wire to your advantage a little better.
I think that's a good point. So we're going to shift to a segment. Now, we have some waivers coming up in a minute. But before we get to waivers, I have one more thing I want to really talk about here, and that is running back timeshares. So we kind of talked about a lot of the disappointing performances and whatever, but there's some timeshare monitoring we have to do with some of these teams. So we're talking the Packers, the Broncos, teams like that, where you have two potential starters. So let's get started with what we saw from Denver this week, because I'm someone that started Melvin Gordon. It was a disappointing performance from him after he was so good a week earlier. What do we make of this team right now? Javonte Williams has 12 points. Melvin Gordon has 7. We talked about this on the flip side with Cincinnati. This was just a really ugly, weird game. 15-10 was the final score. It was not a well-played game. Do we just give a mulligan to both of these people? Who are you comfortable starting next week?
Yeah, one thing to note with this game, Bridgewater suffered a pretty scary injury.
Really scary, yeah.
He's out for week 16. Obviously, prayers for Teddy Bridgewater.
For sure.
That's a tough thing to watch in any space, for sure. So Drew Lock is going to be the starter. And it is kind of insensitive to be talking about fantasy in this situation, but that is what we're doing. So Javonte had 81 total yards, put up 12 points. I think he is the guy that you're starting over Melvin Gordon if you have both of them on your fantasy team. Gordon only played 41% of the snaps, only had one target. Javonte played 59% and had 4 targets. So, you know, he was pretty dynamic. He had 4.8 yards per carry. He's been around that this entire year. So I think if you have Javonte, you're still happy in the game against the Raiders.
That one Williams play where he was almost taken down for a safety, and then he somehow scrabbled his way to a first down. He's such a gritty player. It feels like he's like waiting to kind of put it all together, but there's so many flashes of how he's this like elusive, just like big hulking back. He's just such a fun player to watch.
Yeah, his yards after contact per attempt is among the in the entire league. Yeah, and you saw that you don't see that a lot when running. You see that a lot, when running backs are in the complementary role, when they're in kind of spelling the main back. But when Javonte was in as the starter, that yards after contact per attempt remained, and that's something that is a indication of a really, really good running back. When defenses know you're getting the ball and you can still barrel through, get those extra yards. And the Raiders are currently allowing the 4th most fantasy points to running back. It's a very good matchup, I think. I think you can put Gordon in the flex. I think you can put Javonte in your RB2 spot.
I think Gordon, I mean, it is dangerous to start him in flex. This is a low floor option just because if he's getting 15 or so carries and Williams gets the goal line work, which has been pretty split evenly, but it's dangerous to start Gordon when it feels touchdown dependent, especially when they're not using him as much in the passing game. So that's something I worry about there. But again, we're just trying to monitor these platoon backfields. The next one I want to talk about is the Cowboys. How do you manage the Cowboys going forward? Tony Pollard, still this week, he's still getting 12 carries for Pollard, 16 for Zeke. And from the football perspective, right, we have to separate these things. From the football perspective, not fantasy related, it makes sense why these teams are doing this. Someone like Javonte Williams, he's a rookie, you want him to be fresh. Someone like Zeke, he's been around for a while, battled injuries, you want him to be fresh come the later part of the season. But as a fantasy manager, from our vantage point, which is this very narrow mindset where we're not looking at the teams, we don't care about that type of stuff, it's really frustrating, especially if you're someone like the Cowboys and you have Zeke who puts together 16 points this week and you're like, that's fine, he gets in the end zone for a touchdown, but the 16 carries, you just wish 16 carries has been as high. He's gotten 16 or less carries since his bye in week 7 every week. That's a low volume for someone like Zeke to have, and it's just frustrating in the platoon how we kind of manage that.
Yeah, and with Zeke, something that surprised me literally just now when I started looking at his stats, he's the number 7 back in PPR right now and in standard. And given the way he's been playing, like, and the way the timeshare has evolved with Tony Pollard, that's just unexpected. In the beginning of the season, Elliott was a fantasy mainstay, just the way he has been his entire career. 17 points in week 2, 26, 20, 25, 18, and then going to his bye. And then after the bye, you know, the production started to fall off in a big way, and that obviously corresponded with Tony Pollard. Ezekiel Elliott, you know, he's finding the end zone and he's getting targets when he's on the field, but he's just not as efficient, not as dynamic as Tony Pollard is. And you can just see that when Pollard gets the ball, he just jumps. Like he has a lot of, he just looks more dynamic than Ezekiel Elliott does. He had 12 carries for 74 yards and 3 catches for 13 yards. But I do think that the way the Cowboys use Pollard is perfect for them.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Right. It is perfect for them.
I think if you do end up giving him more carries, I think we're going to see kind of a Chase Edmonds situation a couple of years ago when Edmonds got the bulk of the carries and then that efficiency just dropped because, you know, teams knew what was coming. And so I think Elliott and Pollard together, you know, they work really well, like you said, from an NFL standpoint. So I don't think anything is going to change for fantasy. I think Elliott's going to continue to get the goal line work to continue to get, and they're going to continue to kind of split series, things like that. And then Pollard, being the more dynamic back, I think has a bigger chance of breaking a big play, but a lower chance of, you know, punching it in from the
right.
From the
1 yard line. I agree. And I think Zeke, you're probably fitting in as an RB2 this week. And again, the floor is pretty high for someone like Zeke, especially when he's getting the work around the goal line. And then you're getting somewhere between 10 and 15 or so carries on a weekly basis. But that being said, Tony Pollard is a flex play, but kind of a risky one. Like I think you make a good point there with how they're kind of using Pollard. So we have, all right, we have one more in our segment about running back splits, the Green Bay Packers. Something that we've kind of talked about the Packers all season long as their running back splits, just because it's really confusing. Aaron Jones had 15 points, and that's fine for this week. In a week where so many people were so disappointing, Aaron Jones getting 15, you're not complaining about that. And we sort of said on our last episode how it was going to be interesting how they were going to use Jones. He came off that injury a few weeks ago. He only had those 5 carries against Chicago. It was a weird kind of setup going on there. But he comes back. He has 13 carries for 58 yards, but in 2 receptions. So it was kind of a middling week for someone like Jones. He got a better share of the backfield. But again, with A.J. Dillon, it's kind of difficult to mitigate between these two players.
Yeah, absolutely. Jones established his fantasy day with that receiving score in the game against Baltimore. So 15 points.
Right. He did.
I think you're okay with that given the situation of this backfield. I think with the emergence of A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones' fantasy managers have had to manage their expectations when it comes to what Aaron Jones is going to do. And so I think 15 points is kind of where you're at this point. You're not expecting, you know, early in the season, 20 plus points, a 40 point week, things like that. With the emergence of Dillon in this offense and the way they use him, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Aaron Jones is going to get the workload. 15 touches, 15 fantasy points, I think that's, like you said, maybe a lower floor RB2 option, maybe a higher end RB2 option, and then Dillon, you know.
I don't think he's startable. I don't really. I would.
You don't think Jones is startable?
No. Dillon.
Yeah, I don't think Dylan is startable either. I think the touchdown salvaged a fantasy day if you were starting him, but still only one target, only seven carries. On
if you take away that touchdown, he has nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Point. Yeah, and he's back to that number two role, but the number two role is enough to make Aaron Jones, you know, maybe not as fantasy top seven back as you would hope. So I think the Browns' run defense has been pretty decimated by COVID, I believe, and other injuries. So I think you're obviously slotting Aaron Jones into your lineup, but I think, like I said, you got to manage your expectations for someone like Jones with the emergence of Dylan in the backfield.
For sure, and I think that with all of these splits that we're kind of talking about, these platoons, there's generally one back, whether it's Jones, whether it's Williams, that Zeke, that we're talking about, where it's like, that's the top guy. But I think when you look at the secondary people in those three that we've highlighted here today, I think Gordon you feel okay about as a flex play. The other two, unless you're, I mean, if you're really desperate, fine, start Pollard. But I think with both Pollard and Dylan, I'm a little bit hesitant to start them again, unless you're significantly desperate in a way that I'm not for my team right now as we reach this point of the season. So we get to waiver wires this week, and the waiver wire at this point of the season is always really interesting in a couple different ways, because there's, you know, not a lot of people left in theory to be picking up at this point of the season. We've kind of scavenged all value from it. But that being said, at least in my league, you know, you have four teams left. The rest of the teams aren't picking up people on waivers. So all of a sudden, you have a shot to really get whoever it is that's on the waiver for wire, even if you don't have much fab money left or if you have a priority league. You really have a shot at all of these people. So with the context of this week, so much going on in the COVID front, who are you looking for on the waiver wire?
I think the top one is Ronald Jones for sure. It is a tough matchup for Tampa Bay against Carolina. A little bit of context real quick. If you watched the Tampa Bay-New Orleans game, I'm sorry. You wasted a couple hours of your life.
That game was rough.
It was not a good game. I was facing Tom Brady, so I loved it. But I mean, Tom Brady, Leonard Fournette, gets absolutely popped. He was out. Originally going to be placed on IR. It looks like they're not rushing him onto the IR. He's not expected to play this week, so Rojo is going to be the top guy. But also Godwin out for the season. You know, that just
brutal,
sucks.
Especially ACL, in a ACL tear. Him,
yeah, and then Mike Evans is week to week with a hamstring. So that was just it was a rough game for the Bucs. One thing for waivers, go right now, look at your waiver wire, see if Antonio Brown is available, because someone might have cut him. Reports out of practice were saying he looks like his old self. He looks like how he was earlier in the season, even after being out for an extended period of time. With Godwin out, with maybe Fournette Evans. And Evans out this week, like, Brown should eat against a rough Carolina secondary. But back to waivers, I think Rojo is the top guy. Fournette could miss the remainder of the regular season, depending on the severity of this injury. It's a hamstring, but if Rojo can make it to the Jets game as the lead back in week 17, that could be a fantasy championship winner right there.
It's a good point. I think you make a good point at AB2, and that's a good one to check if he was dropped by someone, just because it was that weird situation where he had the fake vaccine card. But listen, the Bucs are not sticking to their morals about it, but they need him right now because their other guys are at it. So they holding on to AB still, despite getting chance number 87, is still paying off for them right now. And it looks like he could be someone intriguing this week. I think some other people, Justin Jackson, so Eckler's on the COVID list. Again, another guy that's on
the COVID list. I believe he was removed from the COVID list. I'm seeing that he's not on the COVID list, and there is officially that.
Oh, you're right. He was a close contact. He didn't test positive.
He was a close contact.
Correct.
Exactly.
All right.
But I think they're still managing this ankle injury, I believe, for Eckler. So Justin Jackson's still
someone to pick up, just because we didn't really get into it that much. But the Chargers' backfield is something that's interesting to monitor. Eckler still had good production, even though he wasn't getting all the snaps this week. There was a lot of mixture between the different guys, and Eckler still put up a solid production this week. But Jackson's someone I want to put in, because Joshua Kelly, like, he looks good on the field, but he keeps fumbling, and he fumbled again this week, and he's hard to really trust that much. So who else do we kind of look at here? I think on the running back front, again, there's not that many people. Duke Johnson, we didn't talk about him, one of the obscure winners of the week. Duke Johnson all of a sudden just started getting all his run. He was, you know, bursting out big plays, putting up 20 plus point performance. Do you pick him up? I feel like that feels a little fluky to me.
Yeah, I think this one might be a little fluky. It was against the Jets. Now they're going against New Orleans. A complete 180 in terms of matchup strength, I think for sure. And this also corresponds with Malcolm Brown and Miles Gaskin being on the COVID list for an extended period of time. And we've seen throughout this year and also last year when players get put on the COVID list and they stay there, you know, if they're dealing with COVID symptoms, whatever it may be, you know, even if they're off the COVID list or potentially are reportedly practicing in full, you know, you still see a little bit of fatigue there. And a lot of athletes have talked about this. Yoan Moncada in baseball has talked about this as well. So I think this is just a fluke kind of game against a really horrible rush defense. I think it serves to say whichever running back, no matter, you know, what the name is playing against the Jets, you can start.
The Jets run defense is not something to write home about.
Yeah, I would not pick up and start Duke Johnson unless you are just horribly, horribly desperate. The New Orleans run defense is incredible. Their pass rush is also incredible. And I think Duke Johnson, you know, he's going to break some hearts if people are coming in and starting him in week 16.
Yeah, I wouldn't start him, but just a name kind of to mention just because.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because of the 25 points in a running back week where that just didn't happen. And one more guy I think is playing Thursday. I mentioned a little bit earlier, Jeff Wilson. Was a positive game script where he ran all over the Falcons. And we've talked about him before. He with Eli Mitchell probably going to be miss the rest of the regular season. He has had swelling in his knee. He's also in the concussion protocol. So I think Jeff Wilson, he showed after the game, he said, you know, I feel like my old self. And he was really good. He played 88% of the snaps. We didn't see a lot of DeMichael Hasty, which is good for Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson puts up 20 fantasy points and two catches, 110 rushing yards, touchdown. And then in this Tennessee game, where we saw Tennessee, you know, lose to the Steelers, I think this is going to be a pretty competitive game the way the San Francisco defense has been playing. So I think Jeff Wilson the game script is going to be favorable to him. Obviously, we saw in that other spot start where he, you know, did really do well. But I think Jeff Wilson, you can throw into your lineup week 16. If he's still on waivers, I would go pick him up right now.
I agree. I mean, he was productive again this week, and we've kind of talked about this. Whoever is going to be the lead guy in the Kyle Shanahan offense has shown repeatedly over the course of Shanahan's tenure in San Francisco. That's who you want to start. So I think from the receiver perspective, that's kind of the running back download again. Ronald Jones is the guy. Anyone else after Jones, it's kind of you're rolling the dice a little bit more. And probably Wilson, especially if Mitchell isn't there, is somewhat intriguing. From the wide receiver position, we kind of hit on. I mean, if St. Brown's not picked up in your league, Russell Gage.
St. Brown.
I don't know.
I love him.
Was that your Gus Johnson voice?
I don't know. That's just.
All right.
Yeah. I think another wide receiver guy we can talk about, Gabe Davis.
I was about to talk about Gabriel Davis. Yeah. What a week for him.
What a week, yeah. There was that that garbage time touchdown that, you know, if you're a Gabe Davis fantasy owner, you'll love to see it. They probably didn't need to do that. But before that, he still had, I think, four catches, 77 yards, and a touchdown, which is a completely serviceable week for a wide receiver. You know, with Emmanuel Sanders out, I would have hoped that a lot of the fantasy managers would have gotten Gabe Davis, you know, before this week to start him and you know, reap the rewards for that 25 points. But if not, if he's still on waivers, even if Emmanuel Sanders comes back, I think Gabe Davis's role is going to be fine. Josh Allen looks for him in the red zone.
Would you start him this week?
They're playing the Patriots.
Yeah, that's right? Why. Because it's a in a different context, if they were playing like the Jets or something like that, you'd be like, yeah, start Davis. But the Patriots, that's I probably would say no. I mean, if you're desperate, yes. But
I think, you know, Beasley is out in this game. There's, you know, all the politics with Cole Beasley. But from a football standpoint, he's not going to play.
He gets a lot of targets.
Davis is going to slot into the second wide receiver role, I think. And I think Bill Belichick's offense tries to shut down the top guy. I think that would be Stephon Diggs. So J.C. Jackson, I think, will be on Stephon Diggs in this game. So I think Gabe Davis is going to find some space. I would still roll with him in this one. You know, there's options, you know, other waiver wire options. St. Brown, for example, you know, who doesn't have that Patriots matchup. He's playing against the Falcons, so you might want to consider the matchup when you talk about other people to start. But Gabe Davis, I mean, put up 25 points. I think even with the Patriots matchup, he should be a pretty solid wide receiver this week.
Yeah, I think that would be a pretty solid one. Now, again, this is probably my last one. I know we're getting a little bit deep on it, given that there's only a few teams left. But Alan Lazard, and I only say this because MVS looks like he might miss this game. He's in the COVID protocol, and that,
Again, I didn't
yes,
know that.
he is. So you have to wonder with him, is Lazard potentially an intriguing play? All of a sudden this week, it looks like he might miss this week's game of all this Scantling. So you wonder against Cleveland, a team that we mentioned was really banged up last week. That could be an intriguing. I mean, that's pretty deep if you're in a league that still, I don't know why you would really need him, but just as a kind of throwaway option, if all the other guys in the waiver wire are picked up by other people in the league.
Yeah, Valdes-Scantling and Lazard have, over the past 2 weeks, have alternated 20-point weeks. Lazard puts up 20 in week 14. Valdes-Scantling puts up 20 in week 15. So, based on trends, Lazard is going to put up 20 this week. But obviously, that's not true. But
Yes.
if Valdes-Scantling misses this game, I think Lazard is a fine start. I mean, he's flashed with it. Oh, he's only flashed in games where he's scored, so he hasn't really had. He's been touchdown dependent, and obviously the number 70 wide receiver in PPR leagues, he hasn't been a fantasy starter for anyone. But I think if you're desperate, you can throw Lazard in. I would rather have any of the guys we talked about though before.
Now, speaking of desperation, the waiver wire tight ends. Now, it is not pretty at the waiver wire tight end position, but it is very likely that whoever in your league has Travis Kelce won this week after his 41-point performance, and that person that won with Travis Kelce is now freaking out because Travis Kelce might miss this week, and therefore they will need to stream a tight end this week, or at least have one ready in case Kelce does ultimately miss that time. So from that perspective, Cole Kmet could be someone interesting. And we're throwing darts against the wall here. That goes kind of without saying. At this point in the season, there's really no one that's on the tight end waiver wire that you're going to feel good about starting. But even if you could just scratch out 10 points out of someone, you feel good about that. Kmet, and I only say this just because Kmet was pretty good in this week's performance. He had 9 targets, and I think that he's had 5 or more targets in each of the last 4 games. And again, at the tight end position, that's all you're really looking for. You just need some semblance of stability. So Cole Kmet could be someone that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kmet, like you said, putting up a solid fantasy week. He's been doing that, the past few weeks. I mean, 7 points a couple weeks ago, four
But again,
points
like,
last week is obviously not
what
great.
are your standards with
Exactly.
streaming tight
Yeah. No,
ends?
I completely agree. I think for fantasy managers who lost Freiermuth for that concussion, I think there is a very low chance he plays against Kansas City. So I think maybe looking into Foster Moreau, but Darren Waller is probably going to come back. There's a high chance he was potentially to play against the Browns this past week, but was ruled out late. So he's probably going to come back against Denver, I would think. But if not, Foster Moreau contributed 7 catches for 65 yards. And also, I mentioned Gerald Everett before. He's been only 4 targets, but 4 catches for 60 yards. You don't want any part of the Seahawks offense. I get it. As a DK Metcalf fantasy manager, I get it. But a tight end with a pulse who can potentially put up double-digit points,
Yeah.
you got to get what you get when it
Well,
comes to tight
Everett, I
ends.
mean, Everett, I think last week he only had 2 targets, but one of them was a touchdown. So that worked out for him there. So again, that's really getting deep into it. There's no one that you're going to be excited about, but you need to have a contingency plan in place just because we have no idea. We talked about CJ Uzoma before. If you can pick him up, he's been pretty bad of late. But we're just looking for some semblance of hope in the tight end position, and you're just kind of chasing a touchdown. I mean, there's not that much we can really say. If Kelce misses, it sucks. There's not that many good options for him, but you have to have a tight end on your bench as a contingency plan and keep paying attention to what's happening, the news related to that. And if now we don't know if this game's getting pushed back. We're taping this on a Wednesday. It's currently 2:55 on Wednesday afternoon. We don't know what's going to happen yet to that game, but let's say that game does get pushed back. I still think you hold out for Kelce just because the upside with these other guys, you're hoping for what? Like, are you hoping for 8 points realistically with Cole Kmet? Don't panic start Cole Kmet instead of. I still think you hold out for Kelce just because the risk reward of holding out for Kelce, not knowing if he's going to play, is still probably higher than hoping for 9 points of Cole Kmet, 3 receptions for 50 yards. Like, what are you really hoping for?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that goes back to what we were talking about before with Kelce. Like, he's kind of an anomaly at his position. I mean, obviously putting up
Yeah.
41 points
No
at
one
the
knows
tight
who
end
else does
position
that, right?
is, Mark Andrews maybe. You know, I think you're 100% correct in that Kelce is he. You have to disregard, you know, waiver wire tight ends when you have a Travis Kelce who can potentially win you a week like he did for many fantasy managers this week.
For sure. And again, the whole thing is in flux right now with COVID, so many variables. And it makes it weird at this time of the fantasy playoffs where you've rode with these same guys all season long and you're kind of tied the hip to these people, and all of a sudden the whole thing just goes up in flames. So it's kind of difficult, but good luck to you in your fantasy matchup this week. I will be hoping for the same luck I had last week. And it's definitely stressful this time of year. You know, you're with these people all season. We're down to the edge here. But at least you must know that the people you're going to for your fantasy advice are both in the semifinals of their respective leagues. So
yeah,
we're not
total
friends.
I'm in the semis, three leagues. You know what? Yeah, you can do worse. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Well, I would hope that given we have a fantasy football podcast, we're not completely incompetent at fantasy football. So that's what we got for now. We'll be back a little bit later with some more fantasy takes as we round out what's been a wild season and we get here to the home stretch. Good luck to everyone out there in their fantasy leagues, and we will see you guys later.